You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This kind of leads into one of the next songs you wanted to talk about, which is Live in a New Way, which is really kind of a pop song. I had shades of George Harrison rock kind of guitar on the intro.
This one was written around the same time as Happiness to Burn in 2015. And what was on my mind, same backdrop that I'm describing. You meet one person from Congo, you're going to meet 100 people from Congo because these are very social people. So I was meeting all these people, all these new people to me. One of the precursors to that moment that enabled that moment to happen was that there was a huge tragedy in my home state. And that was a young man named Freddie Gray died in the back of a police van in Baltimore. And it was the year of Ferguson, and it was the year of other cities having major, mostly peaceful protests against police violence towards African American citizens. And having come from an old Maryland family, one branch of my family is old Maryland family, and they were plantation owners in the 1600s. They settled, settled 1,000 acres of the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and was a Speaker of the House, the Maryland House of Representatives, bankers, you know, and slaveholders. They were European settlers who owned slaves. And this went on for 250 years. And I spent time thinking about that and contemplating that and wondering about that. And I think for sure, like I went through the whole like white guilt thing and stuff like that, but I had really reached, I think, this other thing for me, which was allowing that piece of my history to be there and recognizing that it's very, very powerful and that I owe a lot to the families of these people who were enslaved by my family, like, and just recognizing that and just understanding that a little better and seeing the privilege in that. So Freddie Gray had died. I started meeting people from Congo and other sub-Saharan African countries. But I guess the death of Freddie Gray really hit hard because my family's from Maryland. And when I saw the protests in the news, it finally got personal for me. You know, I was like, I'm recognizing that there are people in the streets right now after all these centuries still asking for the basic right of safety and due process. And I am possibly related to some of them. And so I don't know why it took that. And I regret that it took that. But at the same time, it did make an impact. And so the Live in a New Way for me, you know, was really about, we got to shift. We got to make a shift. And we have to do it in our own minds. And we also obviously have to do it through policy, and we have to do it through enforcement and so forth. But if we don't change the way we think and really give ourselves an opportunity to look inside our minds and see how we are thinking, because that is the basis of our life. If I allow myself to do this, change is possible. Change is possible. And really allowing ourselves to see some uncomfortable truths about what's in there. I think those are possibly the most uncomfortable truths in my life. That's a very privileged position to be in. If the most uncomfortable truths about my life is the stuff that's going on in my own head, then that's a position of privilege, but it's also a position of being able to make changes. And so I started writing that song, and guess what? It was really depressing, and it was really like, ugh. And so I was like, okay, change up, change up, change up. We got to get in the shallow end of the pool for this one. I would like this song to be one of those songs that people rock out to. It's party time. Let's get together. Let's have a great time. And then 25 years later, after this became your favorite song, you actually listen to the words and hear what it's saying and take it on that deeper level.
Especially hearing you talk about it. One of the things I ask on Backstory Song is I love lyrics that aren't words. And in this song, the chorus is, you know, not really a word. Like, I particularly like Bruce Springsteen's screams. On his first four albums, he screams in all sorts of different ways. And I always ask the artist, you know, did you actually like write that? Did you just sing that? Did it just come to you? You use the word whoa here, which usually means hold the horses. You know, it's like a term you use when you're riding. Whoa, Nelly, you know, that kind of thing. And you use that here. And maybe that word has more meaning, but it's like a whole line here.
Yeah, it's great. You're listening to these songs more carefully than I think I have. I really appreciate that. I know. I really appreciate that about you. I've been listening to your interviews and it's, you know, I appreciate that very much about you, Doug. So one of the jokes we have around the house is, you know, you got to have enough nothing in your weekend. You got to have enough nothing in your summer. It's kind of a joke, but it's true. And you got to have enough nothing in a song as well. I think that's actually a really common rookie mistake that we all make is we try and cram too much into a song. And especially when, you know, with songs, as with any kind of artistic presentation or even like advertising business presentation, you got about 3 seconds max. It's probably half that these days, but you've got about 3 seconds max to really get someone's attention. So if they're going to walk away with one thing stuck in their head, it's got to float on a bed of nothing a little bit. There's got to be some air around it. It's got to be, like you were saying, in Happiness to Burn, the way it's arranged, you hit pause and there's the hook, you know? In Live in a New Way, you know, I think also, yeah, it's like, I didn't really think about it, but you're right. I mean, it's like, okay, whoa, you know, it's not a full stop. It's like, let's just bring the ambient anxiety down a little bit, or the intensity or whatever's going on for people, the anger, the this, the that. And this song is really written to other white people. I'm just going to say that. Like, I don't really talk about that very much, you know?
This is a message to white people.
It's absolutely, it's a white person white-splaining a little basic lesson about human dignity and respecting our neighbors. I never want to come across as like preaching, because I'm not a preacher. I'm not that person. I try not to be that person. I really, really powerfully believe in our ability to change if we are met where we are by the right person, the right word, the right teacher, the right whatever, you know? And I think some people learn better if they get hit with a 2x4, metaphorically speaking, you know? Sometimes in reality, I suppose, but like, you know, metaphorically speaking, I think we all have to have some of that. But I think also that there are opportunities in the middle of shallow end of the pool, light vibe, rocking out, chilling out, like to get a pretty deep message into our bones. Like that potential exists. So if somebody comes to me with unsolicited advice, I can tell you that the response that they get from me is not very good. I'm working on it, but I don't do unsolicited advice very well. I endeavor not to give it unless I, you know, see a serious problem with something. But it's like, I do understand how sensitive people are, how sensitive white people like me are to the topic of racism, and recognizing that like this stuff is kind of hardwired into us. You know, that's what happens after centuries. Stuff gets hardwired in. And so how do we wiggle that tooth and get it out of there? How do we very skillfully help each other overcome stuff that's entrenched? You know, I mean, that's a huge question to put in a pop song, but you know, I'm a great believer in like, you know, you get more flies with honey, you know, than you do with anything else. And so, but also, you know, I don't go around hitting people over the head with my records. And I think my favorite music to listen to and absorb these days is the lighter stuff. I'm talking like lighter in the sense of, for instance, Frankie Please by Rodney Crowell, which is one of my favorite songs ever. The topic is light and the writing is absolutely flawless. And it doesn't carry any kind of deeper message, you know, the way we're talking about.
No, this is a much deeper song than I realized, you know? this comes from a much deeper place than I expected.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading and studying it. You have a half chorus the first time you do the chorus, and then you do the full chorus after two more verses. And what I noticed was, which maybe you didn't notice when you're doing it, but you do the second whoa and an octave lower, and it grabs you. You know what I'm talking about in the song?
Yeah, I do. And with the things you're bringing up right now, I want to give a massive shout out to Shane Alexander, who produced this record. you know, as anybody who's had a world-class producer make their record knows, you know, the decisions that get made in the mixing room, as well as the decisions that get made for collecting, you know, vocal takes. Some of these songs only had a couple takes, but others, you know, I was in the vocal booth a few times to do some different things. So we had done a lot of pre-production arranging on things, and I'm trying to remember like where that particular decision came in, but it was definitely conscious. And I appreciate you noticing that, because this was the work that Shane and I did together beforehand. This was a sensibility that he was bringing to the recording takes. And then the decisions that got made in the mixing room, nothing's out of place. You know, this is one of the things that has been such a gift to me as an artist, is to have a record with nothing out of place. Everything came under scrutiny, you know?
How do you know when a song is done?
Like in the writing of it or the producing of it, or what's your...
The whole process. Like, so a lot of people have to play it in front of people and then see the audience's reaction, you know, and every song is different. They're like children. Sometimes you write it in 3 minutes and it's done and that's perfect. And that's doesn't need to change a thing. And then sometimes you have to, you know, work on them over 5 and 7 and 10 years. And how do you know when a song is done, or when do you think you know a song is done?
I'm going to approach it, I think, from the writing aspect. You know, like I'm sitting here looking at these curtains that I made. You know, I've made all the curtains in my house. I can sew a straight line, what can I say? But it's like, you know, you make the curtains and the hems out. You know, you just haven't done the bottom hem yet. It's like, and there's a similar moment in songwriting for me where I recognize that I've reached the natural conclusion of my part of the process, and now it's time to bring it to somebody who knows more. And I've been blessed with several mentors. So I guess, and having a really reliable mentor who won't mess around with you, won't waste your time too much, but also knows how to respond and give some feedback without shutting down the basic goodness of the song or the basic heart of the artist. Those people are worth their weight in gold. And I've had several of them. One has been Ed Desjardins, who I mentioned earlier up in Reedfield. He brought me through that process a lot and was that sounding board for me, that better, much better songwriter. I had tons to learn from him. I trusted him, and he knew how to be like pointed but gentle with feedback. But what is that moment? Well, what does that really mean? I think there's a certain type of just being stuck that comes for me when a song is just about ready to bring to that next part of the process, the arranging process or the feedback process, or, you know, that developmental edit. And what I try to do when I'm writing, there's a couple of things I've learned to do. One is to keep my creative door open all the time and just allow the ideas to come any time of day or night. I'm not an obsessive, sleepless kind of a worker. Some people work that way. I try and sleep every night.
You sleep well?
Well, sometimes. Lately, it's been up and down. So I try and keep that creative door open. This is a tough one. This is a tough one because, like, songs have their own personalities too. But there are some things about craft that I think I can address. So there's the woo-woo aspect, and then there's the craft aspect. And, you know, the craft being the basic arranging, the basic message, the filing away at lines that are not quite done, marking lines for replacement, these kinds of things. And songs can get 90% done and still have quite a bit of like masking tape on them, you know, for lack of a better way to put it. And so I like to leave a certain amount of that. You know, it's like pulling, I'm a very visual person, as you can see. It's like pulling the stickers off the window when you're done with the remodel, you know, that kind of thing. I like to leave some of that stuff there so that it can be more than I can come up with by myself. So like when I take it to the studio, we have a solid arrangement. We have, it's been through some kind of pre-production refining. If I'm going to come down to a feeling or a sense of like when a song is done, there's nothing in it that bothers me. And I know that sounds like a bargain basement kind of way of being done.
You're no longer bothered.
I'm no longer bothered by anything. Those could be single words. Those could be lines. Those could be arrangement related. Those could be...
how the audience reacts when you play it.
How the audience reacts, or, you know, even more so, how I feel putting that out there in front of them. it's not a fully reliable thing, because anybody who's like hammered away at any craft of any sort for a long time knows what it feels like to go too far with something. And this is also a rookie mistake that people have to kind of learn the hard way most of the time, I think, is when to stop. Many other artists have said it better than I over the course of centuries, you know, of like knowing when to back away. That's really what it is for me. And so these days I try and keep the creative door open, and I try and keep a fairly light grip on things. So I keep a light grip on every word, every line, every creative decision that goes into making that song, so that I don't create, you know, what people call darlings. You know, they say, kill your darlings. Well, I don't believe you have to kill every single darling in your song, right? I take issue a little bit with that whole phrase, but at the same time, it has a lot of, ton of merit.
Sometimes darlings are darling, you know, they're darling, and it's okay to be darling. You know?
Yeah, there's a time and a place to be darling. The song Happiness to Burn is kind of darling, you know, but it's because it's in a wheelhouse that's got some of that sort of shine to it, you know? So I think keeping a light hold on whatever I'm creating is essential for pursuing excellence, because it allows me to get under the hood and tear out what's not working, you know, and toss it in the heap for the next song, or put it in the trash or the burn pile or whatever, you know. It's like, and to be a little less attached, I think, is really, really helpful.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.